Welcome to the Soccer Central Podcast.
It is December the 1st, but for fans of the beautiful game here in Toronto, it's the start of something which we have no idea how it's going to end. It's weird. It's odd for those of us who have covered and followed Toronto FC for the last 10 years. We're getting set for an MLS Cup final. I'll say that again. We're getting set for an MLS Cup final at BMO Field, something that for nine previous years, no one really thought would ever happen. We'd expect at some point for a meteor to crash into the planet Earth, the Cubs to win the World Series, but not this, not this. This is just absolutely insane. James Charminier alongside John Molinaro, who I know agrees with me because he's been entrenched with TFC for those 10 years. In fact, dating back to that press conference at Scallywags in 2006 when they announced TFC.
Yeah.
Back in those days, that was the first time. And you've been there every single game since. Are you at ease? Are you feeling comfortable in this situation? Or are you a little bit lost right now?
A little bit of all those things, to be honest. To a certain degree, it hasn't quite sunk in. To a certain extent, I'm ecstatic and really looking forward to next Saturday. And I think mostly what I am is just reflective. I mean, I couldn't help, you know, amongst all the chaos yesterday after the final whistle and, you know, players rushing the field and then getting presented the Eastern Conference trophy and the fireworks going off and the fans going nuts. So it was bedlam. But amidst all that, I mean, I found that I was in a pretty reflective mood and just thinking about all the time I'd spent covering this team and how, you know, for 8 years, this was a very bad team. And not to put too fine of a point on it, but, you know, covering this team during those 8 years was a pride swallowing, soul sucking job. It really was. And I don't mind telling you that there were, you know, one or two times where I honestly thought about walking away. I'm just like, I can't deal with this. And it wasn't the losing that sort of bothered me. It was just the sheer dysfunction, the sheer repetition, and there just didn't appear to be any hope. You know, they just seemed like in a perpetual cycle of dysfunction and hopelessness.
There was an arrogance.
Yeah, and all that too.
Well,
and
there was even just worse.
There was just a foul mood around the franchise and the fan base and everything. So it was very hard. So to go from that to now, where they are, Toronto FC, I would argue, is very much a model franchise in Major League Soccer. to go undergo that transformation. And remember, 2 years ago, I think they were in that laughingstock category with the whole, you know.
There's no doubt they were.
Yeah. So I just couldn't help but keep reflecting on that and thinking about the amazing metamorphosis that this organization has gone under. So it was a sobering moment for sure last night.
Who do you give most credit to for the turnaround? Obviously, Tim Lowicki comes in and he's a very polarizing figure. We know that. But. Yeah. He made some very important hires. He cleaned house, essentially. He brings in Tim Bezpachenko, this whiz kid from the MLS offices, who some thought was too inexperienced to lead what should be a storied large club in MLS. But you can't knock very many moves Bez has done. He brings in Greg Vanney.
Mm-hmm.
Greg Vanney, who was judged when he first hired, not enough experience. Who is this guy, an American coming here? He's led this team to the MLS Cup final. Michael Bradley, you know, the leadership he's brought, the focus, the intensity he's brought with him. Where do you lay this? Is it one person? I mean, oh, listen, there isn't just one person.
Right.
But who would you say is the one guy that you say, hey, good job, you got this ball rolling?
Well, I mean, in terms of who got the ball rolling, I really give credit to Tim Lewicki, and I'm sure that's going to rub a lot of listeners the wrong way, but he was really the first MLSE executive who I think seriously advocated and seriously pushed and championed Toronto FC. We all know TFC is always going to be, you know, at least number three in the MLSE pecking order, always behind the Raptors and Leafs. And we get that, you know, but he was a guy who never sort of treated TFC as the stepson, as the ugly stepchild. He championed them and always considered them on equal with TFC and the Raptors. You can say a lot of things, and God knows they got the Defoe thing wrong, and then you know they compounded matters with the whole bloody big deal campaign. But out of that, we saw what he was trying to do and the footprint and the sort of blueprint that he was trying to establish. And, you know, they corrected that mistake very quickly, went out and got Sebastian Giovinco and Jozy Altidor, and then this offseason got, you know, players like Drew Moore and Clint Irwin and Steven Betashur and Will Johnson. Not DPs, but MLS veterans. And, you know, because they understood that they need, you know, a well-round balanced side. So I think there's a great deal of credit to go around. Obviously, Tim Leiwicki got it rolling. Tim Bezbatchenko deserves a great deal of credit for being the architect and actually going out and happen. I think Greg Vanney deserves, you know, the main kudos here, because he was someone when he was first appointed was, you know, there was a lot of, as you said, oh, who's this guy? He has no experience. And this is just the same old TFC hiring a guy who doesn't know, who hasn't had a head coaching job before. But he's really grown into the role, I think, especially this season. And the way he managed the team through, you know, the decimating injury crisis, you know, changing the tactical formation and tactical identity of this team, you know, after last year when they leaked goals, to now being, you know, a very defensively responsible team, and just getting the most out of his players. I can't heap enough praise on Greg Vanney. And then, of course, the players too. You know, I mean, it couldn't have been easy for a lot of them. You know, I know that most of them weren't here during the, you know, the lean years, although some of them were.
Not many, though.
Yeah, but a few. Osorio and Morgan and whatnot. But people like Michael Bradley and Giovinco and Altidore, you know, they're constantly reminded of it, of the history, right? It's constantly weighs on their mind. And they can, I know they've said, oh, the past is the past and they don't worry about it. But, you know, I don't buy that. You know, the history of failure totally envelops this franchise. It's hard to escape it. So, I mean, full credit to them for, you know, sticking to it. And I think finally putting that chapter of TFC's history to bed.
And I agree. I think it has been put to bed now. You can say that. No matter what happens on the 10th against Seattle, that history has been put to bed.
Yeah.
And I think in many ways, this is even sweeter for the fans now, given what they've been through. Now,
sure.
At the time, you know, if you told them, listen, you know, it's going to be worth it. We're going to come out of this eventually. They would have told you where to go because it was that miserable.
Right.
But I think right now, had this team won in year 3 or 4 and been a typical functional franchise, that would have been incredible. Of course it would. But there's something very sweet about this success now, given where this team was. This team had hit rock bottom on not once, but several occasions.
Mm-hmm.
And for me, it really did begin that Defoe year. That's when I look at the ascendancy of this team to a potential champion. I look at that year. Now, Defoe didn't work out, but I didn't hold the club responsible to that. Maybe they should have done their due diligence a little bit better.
They should have, yeah,
perhaps.
Absolutely.
But listen, who knows what Jermaine Defoe told that club, right?
Right.
He was committed when he first started, you know, and he was the right kind of player to target. He was very good when he played.
Mm-hmm.
Didn't work out, but I never really blame the club for that. I blame Jermaine Defoe.
Right.
More so. But to put that behind them and then go out and get Sebastian Giovinco as a far better replacement.
And Altidore too.
And Altidore as well.
They were quick to correct the mistake. I think
they were,
that's,
yeah.
I think that's what,
and they,
you know, full
it,
credit
they admit
to them.
That was a mistake.
Absolutely.
And the Giovinco signing was a far, you know, far less public signing.
It was far more muted.
They
absolutely
learned that, you know,
yeah.
They learned that, listen, let's just get the results on the field. Enough of this showboating.
Right.
And Leiwicki brought showboating with him. That's what he does. And I understand that. But they really learned it. And Bezbatchenko, you know, Tim Bezbatchenko, he's not a showboating kind of guy.
No.
He's very understated.
Very low-key.
Very low-key, yeah. So this is far more in his mold, the way he built this team. I wonder, you know, no matter what happens now in the 10th, will anything really change from this point? Was this the high point, do you think? I mean, listen, getting a championship, and if they win it and they lift that in BMO Field, it's going to be something very special to the fan base. But this occasion against Montreal being a Canadian team, these two games,
mm-hmm.
and the hype that built around it, the biggest moment in Canadian club soccer history, one of the biggest moments in Canadian soccer history, It was almost this perfect storm. Have we maxed out now? Or can we go further beyond that with a cup championship? When I say we, I mean this city, not the club necessarily.
Oh, I think so. Yeah, I think, I think if, you know, we've got to remember, we've got 9 days of hype to go, right? So this isn't a short turnaround. So I think that's going to lead to it. And yeah, I think you're going to be amazed how much this sort of captures the attention of the city of Toronto, and not just the soccer community, but I think just the larger community at large. And I think this is going to be huge for soccer in Canada. I've likened it to potentially, what I'll be interested to see, James, is if this is going to be like the under-20 Women's World Cup that was in Edmonton in 2002. Because if you remember, that was the tournament where they had 40 and 50,000 people at Commonwealth Stadium for Canada's games. And that was the tournament that really introduced the world to Christine Sinclair and Diana Matheson and Cara Lang. And you talk to several members of the current women's team, so the next generation of stars, they'll tell you that when they were young girls, they watched that tournament and they watched people like Christine Sinclair. And that was what inspired them to take up the game and to, you know, wanted to become professional soccer players. Mm-hmm. So I'll be very interested to see, this two-game series with Montreal that's passed and this, you know, MLS Cup championship game that's coming up, if that will have the same effect for Canadian soccer. That's something we won't know until several years
down the line. That's how you quantify it, right? We've discussed this the last 2 weeks. I've been asked it over and over again. So have you. What does it mean for Canadian soccer, the growth of the game in this country?
It could be huge.
That's how you quantify it in 10, 15, even 20 years. And kids saying, man, it was that run, that year that got me interested in soccer.
Right.
And great, but it's a... Like I said, we won't know for a long time.
Yeah.
Now, viewership might go up. TV numbers tell a story as well.
Yeah.
I imagine the numbers will come out soon and they'll be extremely high, probably even higher than last week against Montreal. And will there be a bump next year for the regular season? We'll see. I'm sure there'll be a slight bump.
Yeah.
But just it's hit the sporting narrative in this city and maybe this country. I'm not sure. I want to hear from people out in Vancouver,
right.
Whitecaps fans. You know, is there any talk about this? How big is it? Or is it purely a regional thing?
Right.
I'm sure it's mainly regional. MLS isn't quite national just yet.
Right.
But it's something that, you know, when we got involved in the game in this country, in the media, you know, you look forward and say, where can we get to? This is a major step, at the very least, a major step in this sports national narrative. Not there yet. We're far from it.
Sure.
We're far from it. And obviously the European game is still huge. It's still massive. But to get a domestic following is going to be really important. You piggyback that with maybe a decent national team, and who knows where we can go. It's exciting, to say the very least.
It really is. Yeah.
I wonder also, though, that the fact that these two games went down the way they did with such drama, there was just such compelling matches that helped too. Had this been a 2-1 or a 3-1 victory for TFC or Montreal over two legs, fantastic, great story. But there's something magical about what happened. In both games, they were incredible.
Yeah,
they were classics. They were instant classics.
Yeah, I kind of used the adjective epic in describing them. And it's interesting because it's already, not that it's necessarily blown up on Twitter, but there's kind of a dialogue that's already going on in social media about ranking this in terms of MLS playoff history, whether it's the best game or the best series. Yeah, I think the nature of the games and how they played out and sort of the drama and the great theater. You know, that down 3-0 in the first leg, and then they get two goals to claw their way back into the series. If they don't get those two goals, if Montreal comes to Toronto with a 3-goal lead, it's over. Like, I'm not sure we're not having this discussion.
No.
So those two goals were huge. And then the way it played out yesterday with, you know, Toronto dominating and then Montreal scoring a goal totally against the run of play. And you thought, oh my God, like, how could, you know, here we go again. And then Toronto responds and then Montreal ties it up and fights back. And then, you know, Nick Hagelin scores that header and we're going to extra time. And then, you know, and Giovinco goes down injured and you think, oh my God, can Toronto FC...
You can feel the energy, like just suck in and exhale and suck in and exhale,
can
right?
Can they win without Giovinco? And then it turns out they can. So, I mean, it was... The way that it played out was, I think, just as important in terms of how it, what played out. I think that was a major role in this being, as I said, just an epic playoff series.
This team's getting such an identity to it, isn't it? You know,
just
does not quit. And you have Tassain Ricketts, a Canadian boy, coming off the bench and just changing the game,
you know,
whenever he comes off the bench. Jozy Altidore, who I've been critical about, you know, always rate him as a good player, but right. overrated, I thought. He's been an absolute monster in these playoffs and for much of the season,
yeah.
late season in particular. But last night, he won me over.
Yeah,
I am a Jozy supporter. I get it. What he can bring to it's almost like the league's perfect for him. I don't know how he didn't remake it in the Premier League, honestly, because he's that kind of player that right. you think would, although that league's changed quite a bit, but he's built for the MLS at this point. And he was an absolute beast out there. Almost killed Bernadello.
Yeah.
And I'm not kidding there. He almost killed Bernadello,
yeah.
who should, by the way, have never played on. But concussion protocols are a discussion for a different show.
Right. I think over the last, certainly over the last, you know, few weeks during the playoffs and late in the regular season, I think Jozy Altidore has been not only TFC's best player, but I think he's been Toronto FC's most influential and important player. You know, I think this has long been, well, the last two seasons, I mean, this is largely seen as, you know, Michael Bradley's team to an extent in that he's the heart and soul of the team, and Sebastian Giovinco in that, you know, where would they be without him? But these last 2 months, I think Altidore has been lights out, and, you know, he's scored in every playoff game. In five consecutive playoff games, the first person in MLS history to score in five consecutive playoff games in one season. And we saw it yesterday, like even when Giovinco went down, and I don't know how you feel about it, James, but when Giovinco went down an extra time, you know, maybe the natural tendency would have been to thought, oh man, you know, TFC are really in trouble here. But I didn't think that. I thought
100% with you. I was like, okay. It sucks, sure, but Jozy
yeah.
has been the best player on the field tonight.
Yeah.
Again.
And did you see, I mean, I don't know if you saw it, but like the way he sort of backheel dribbled, I guess is the best way I can describe it, in skipping past that defender and then playing in that gray ball for Ricketts to poke home to make it 5-2. You know,
he's
what
so
a play.
Elusive. His speed is so elusive. He's
yeah.
a big guy. I wish he'd talk more to the media because he actually speaks really well.
He does.
But he just isn't. I don't know if it's a comfort level, but yeah. doesn't generally make himself available.
You know what the issue is? Because he had a pretty bad, rough time of it when he was in England, right? So, I mean, he absolutely got slated by the tabloids and by the press over there. So I think there's a little bit of reluctance to deal with us. He's got, I have to hand it to him. He has gotten a little bit better with, you know, the regular reporters who cover the team on a regular basis. You know, and he's kind of let his guard down a bit, but there's still that sort of hesitancy just because he's been burned in the past.
You know, I was so happy going into the room last night post-match, and I was expecting, you know, the champagne showers, as we've seen
beer showers
in the city, right?
Yeah.
And we get in the room, and all the plastic sheeting was being taken down, and the champagne bottles were sitting there unopened
yeah.
on the floor. I thought, I love that.
Yeah.
You know, these guys are well aware that the job's not done yet. Now, they had a beer shower. You know, something you mentioned, some Stellas were shaken and let go, which is great, and they should. But you're right; you mentioned it in your story, how understated the celebrations were.
Yeah,
you know, and that's great. I like to see that, and I'm not going to throw any team under the bus. Toronto Blue Jays, but this team knows that you know they have to still win a championship, and then watch out.
Yeah,
but. You go in that room, and they were happy, you know. There's a real good energy in that room last night. There's
sure
no
was.
Doubt about it. They were holding the trophy, you know. There were some emotional-looking eyes, for sure. But they knew that, you know, let's not get crazy. Let's leave that champagne. We're going to open it,
yeah.
but not for another 10 days.
And I think, you know, that – I think for that, you credit people like – well, two people, and specifically Greg Vanney and Michael Bradley. They kind of set the tone with their demeanor and the way they conduct themselves. They're – that's not to say that they're not passionate people and they don't have, you know, do what they do with, you know, without emotion. Of course they do, but they're very concentrated and very, you know, focused. And, you know, they understand their positions being what they are as the coach and captain. That they have to set the tone for the rest of the team. So I think that sort of reserved mutedness, for lack of a better term, that's their doing, just the way that they conduct themselves.
And I think on the field, opponents see that as well.
Sure they do.
You know, yeah. And that is next factor, I think, that single-mindedness that hasn't been there ever at Toronto FC. Teams don't particularly want to play TFC, not just because of the talent on the field, but,
right.
man, they mean business. And I give Montreal a lot of credit for making it
absolutely,
so close
yeah.
because it's easy to lose that in all this. is how close Montreal came.
Yeah.
And if you look at the regular season, no one would have picked them to have a deep run in the playoffs, and they bossed it for most of the playoffs up until this last game.
Yeah, that's a good point. We should sort of give credit to the Montreal Impact and send out our congrats to them, because it was a great regular season and even better playoffs. I mean, what a story that was. I mean, going to DC United and beat DC, who were, you know, down the regular season stretch, the hottest team in Major League Soccer, beat the number one seed in the New York Red Bulls home and away.
Most people's favorites to win the damn thing.
Yeah. I mean, I think a lot of people figured they might get a result at home, but no one, I think, really thought they would go to Red Bull Arena and get a result, and they did that. And then, again, you know, push Toronto FC to the absolute limit. They were, Greg Vanney said it in the post-match press conference, they're a tough team. You know, they wanted it, and they battled really hard. So, Montreal Impact have nothing to be ashamed about. It was a fantastic season, and I think the fact that we're still talking about this being such a memorable series owes as much to what they did and what they contributed as it does to, you know, TFC.
By the way, Nick DeSantis and Joey Saputo, if right now you're not sitting down meeting with Patrice Bernier's agent,
yeah, well,
what are you doing?
Yeah,
I don't care that he's 87 years old, right? He's out of contract. He's a Montreal boy through and through.
Yeah,
he played almost 120 minutes at a high quality yesterday.
He was great last night,
wasn't he? Fantastic again yesterday.
Yeah.
I mean, that one goal, he just totally bitched poor old Michael Bradley.
Oh, certainly did. Oh, yeah, boy. He nicked the ball off him pretty easily.
He plays not like a 37-year-old plays. Yeah. He's so good. Get the man the money.
Yeah. I'm still like getting shivers about that pass, that no-look pass that he delivered Oduro in the first leg to open up 1-0 lead.
Yeah.
What a player.
Oduro.
Yeah, where does this come from? Where was this, Dominic? That's what I want to know. During your time in Toronto.
Most of his time in Montreal. You know, I speak to some of the Montreal journalists, and they're saying, yeah, we love Oduro, and real pacey guy. Didn't know there was much else there, but he's been lights out in the playoffs.
He's been fantastic. And, like, this is something I never thought I would say about Dominic Oduro, but the composure in front of goal has been quite startling.
It really has, yeah.
So, yeah, I mean, and, you know, God bless him. He's a great guy. I mean, he was a good guy when he was here in Toronto. I always enjoyed talking to him. But, yeah, would have been nice to have seen a little bit of this when he was in Toronto.
See some comparisons between Oduro and Ricketts, actually, to a certain degree, you know.
Yeah.
Speed merchants, not known for their composure, but both in the playoffs, when given the chance, everybody stood up and scored some very big goals.
Yeah.
My biggest concern right now for TFC revolves around the Wall of Fame, okay?
Why?
Because, you know, they celebrated the Wall of Fame too early in franchise history, right?
Sure.
And the guys there, listen, they're foundation guys. I'm fine.
Dick we should Yeo, say Dickio
Robinson,
and Robbo, right?
And Dero.
And Dero, right.
Right, fine. But if these guys end up winning a cup, they all deserve to be on that wall.
Well,
if the standard has been set, guys that played, who literally were good players in a really bad team for many years. But come on, when that was first announced, the Wall of Fame, I thought, oh man, really? Now? Yeah. Oof.
Yeah, I understand what they were trying to do, but yeah, it was far too
another early. Early TFC management mistake is what it was.
Well.
And that's nothing against those guys. I mentioned they are foundation
players. No, absolutely not.
And they were good players, very good players. But you just kind of set the bar, and now these guys are champions, potentially. I mean, they could lose, by the way. And we're talking as if they're champions. They could lose quite happily easily to Seattle, who's a decent team,
yeah,
a balanced team. They got some star power in Ladera,
Jordan Morris.
Yeah, I mean, obviously it's not a walkover. Wonderful support, but TFC is going to be the big favorites, no?
I don't know about big favorite. I think they're the favorite, no question. But Seattle's going to be a tricky test. I mean, it's interesting to note. I mean, they were last place in the Western Conference in July.
Mm-hmm.
I think as late as July 31st, and since then they've only lost twice.
Yeah.
And, you know, they underwent coaching change. Ziggy Schmidt left and, you know, Brian Schmelzer went in, and Ladero was a great addition, and they're getting contributions from Valdez and Morris and Osvaldo and so many others. So it's I think they're going to be a tough test, much in the same way that Montreal will be. Not that Seattle plays that same counterattacking style, but I just think they're going to be a tough out, so to speak.
I wonder what the next week will give us, JMO. We're going to be pretty busy, aren't we? We're not used to this tour. We had the MLS Cup here back in 2010. Obviously, there was no home team involved in that one. The league's grown since then. The interest level's grown. Mm-hmm. It's going to be a bit of a circus, isn't it?
Well, we just kind of saw it yesterday, right? I mean, you know, there's usually, you know, 20, I would say at most, sort of media people in the press box on a given day. There was, what, four times as much yesterday?
I think there was 80.
80 and change?
That's actually build. They had to build
an auxiliary press box. Yeah. They're probably going to have to build two auxiliary press boxes for next Saturday because of all the reporters from this from the United States coming in. So this is going to blow up, I think, to a certain extent.
Yeah.
Yeah.
No, it's going to be pretty special. And who'd have thought all those years ago in that little pub in Scallywags talking about this new football club coming to the town, we'd be sitting here right now on the verge of, well, in the midst of something pretty special.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, we've touched on it, but yeah, it's just an amazing sort of transformation that the club has undergone.
That's what I really enjoyed post-match last night, speaking to the fans. And, you know, the whole talk was centered around, man, we've been through so much. We're really enjoying this. And they really were, man. God, I spoke to a lot of extremely inebriated fans last night, as you generally do at TFC games.
Sure.
Only this time, I wasn't inebriated, sadly.
There's a switch.
I know, sadly. But it was fun, though. I really enjoyed talking to them. Because, you know, they have been through so much and they're well aware of that.
Oh, God, yeah.
And like they love this team.
Yeah. And how beaten down has this fan base been at times? And how, you know, loyal.
Stock, like you said.
Yeah. Like they've had to put up with so much. So, I mean, it's fantastic for the fan base who have, I think, largely through thick and thin, really stayed behind this. This team during the worst of times, and God knows there's been a lot of bad times. So I think that's been phenomenal. I tweeted this out, but I really have to mention on air, there's a lot of people behind the scenes at Toronto FC who, you know, not players, not sort of, you know, Greg Vanney or people you would know, but a lot of people on the staff that you don't know, you never hear about, who put a lot of hard work into this team. And, you know, they deserve a lot of credit. One person in particular who I'm happy for a lot of people at Toronto FC, Greg Vanney, because I think he's a class guy. The players, obviously, so on and so forth. I think the one guy I'm most happy for is Mike Massaro, who is the media relations manager. This is a guy who has been with the team, I want to say, 6 or 7 years now. So he was there very much during the worst of times, during the 0-9 start under Arn Vinter, during, you know, players getting arrested down in Houston or Texas, having to be bailed out. I mean, the guy has had to deal with a lot of negativity and crap around this team. And yet he's always done it with a great deal of professionalism, grace, and class. And Mike makes my job easier as a reporter. He's become a very good friend as a fellow Juventus fan.
I was going to say, all this loving now is pretty much because he's a Juve fan.
But generally, in all seriousness, he is, he's a longtime employee, not the longest serving employee, but a longtime employee who has had to, he's been on the front lines of when this team was being berated and hammered, and he's always dealt with it with a great deal of grace and class. So, I mean, I'm happy for a lot of people. At TFC, I'm probably most happy for Mike Massaro.
It's a tough job.
It's a very tough job.
In the bad times, it's a very tough job being that liaison between the media, the hacks, and the players because there's been a lot of tension there, as you know, O2 well over the years.
Yeah.
And he's had to try and, you know, appease both sides.
Absolutely.
And the whole media department at TFC are top quality.
Yeah, they really are.
Yeah. And also, you know, this is an odd week for the football world. A really, generally speaking, a terrible week for the football world.
Yeah.
Given the Chepkwenninsi tragedy, of course. But for, you know, a few minutes last night, we could kind of forget about that and focus on the game on the field and leave with a smile on our face because it's, I think we've seen the tragedy in Brazil has really brought the best out of football.
Yeah.
You see the various moments of silences and the reaction around the world. It really is a family, football family. And talking to the players on the Tuesday, was it Tuesday?
Yeah, it was Tuesday.
About that. They were choked up. They were, you know, took it very, very personally, you know, very close to home.
Well, and I think because it hits close to home, right? Because they're always traveling and, you know, in planes and flying all over the continent to get to a game, to do something that they love. And to see life like that snuffed out like that, it's it's pretty sobering, and I don't doubt that it hit close to home for a lot of players.
You saw the images from the stadium in Medellin last night.
Yeah.
In my word. And even at the Chapecoense Stadium as well, the day after, all the fans gathered there and they're chanting all the players' names.
It was, yeah.
My God, man. I can't even imagine what it must be like.
I think Fox Sports Brazil, I think it was them or something like that. They were supposed to air the game yesterday and they just had like a black screen for 90 minutes with some sort of hashtag on it, which I can't remember off the top of my head.
I think like a 90 minutes.
Something like that. Yeah. 90 minute silence. I think that's about right. So, I mean.
No, class. Absolutely.
Yeah,
class.
It was, I what can you say about that?
Yeah. All right, J-Mo, we're almost out of time. Obviously, the Premier League returns this weekend. More drama there. Lots to come on Sportsnet starting on Saturday. Sunderland, Leicester and Stoke Burnley on 9:30 Eastern. And then the late one has West Ham Arsenal. Your Arsenal at noon. Santi Cazorla out for 3 months.
Sure.
Ankle surgery. You've been wondering where he's been. His nagging injury.
Can't catch
that's,
a break.
That's a
this
huge
team.
Loss. When they're so different when he's in that midfield, aren't they?
Yeah.
Tough one.
God. Ugh.
We're doing actually on the show this weekend. We're going to look at the flops and the best signings of the season. Who's done what?
Oh, yeah?
And on the flops, I want to put in Granit Xhaka just because...
Well, yeah.
£35 million. I thought he was what that team needed.
Has he even played?
He's not very often.
Yeah.
He's certainly not in the first name on the team sheet.
Right.
You know, and maybe it'll take time. I'm not saying he's a bust, but so far, I mean, that's the kind of player that Arsenal needed and it hasn't worked out. But yeah, losing Cazorla is a huge loss, but it's pretty tight there. Moving to Sunday, we have yet more for you. 10:30 Eastern on Sportsnet, Everton, Manchester United. Which is obviously going to be an intriguing one. No Wayne Rooney against his old club. Now he's searching.
Is he injured or
he's suspended? Got suspended
right,
in the
right.
FL Cup this week, so he's not playing in that one. Too bad because he's searching for goal number 249 to equal Sir Bobby Charlton's record at Manchester United. Could have done it against his old club.
That would have been something.
Not that Rooney scores very often these days. But would have been something. Anything else you want to get to? What's happening on the website? I mean, so much MLS Cup.
There's a lot of content. MLS Cup content now, and we're going to continue. We'll have fresh MLS Cup content from now until December 10th and after the game. And then we've got, EPL this weekend on Sportsnet. So we'll have a whole bunch of preview stuff right now. But just it'll be MLS Cup crazy between now and the next week and a half.
We didn't get to the snippy Don Garber in this press conference yesterday regarding.
Well, do you want to talk about that real quick? Yeah. I mean, I don't know what he expected. I mean, for people who don't know, so they basically announced a new developmental initiative that, you know, the Generation Adidas program has been extended to Canada, which is great. And in a nutshell, what the issue here is that American players who play on Canadian teams have always been deemed domestic players in MLS, whereas Canadian players who play on U.S. teams have always been deemed international players. And the problem is that teams only have a certain amount of international slots. So U.S. teams are a lot less likely to go for a Canadian player because it burns up a valued international slot. So this has been a long point, been a point of contention for advocates of Canadian soccer. So yesterday, what they basically did was they said any sort of homegrown player that is Canadian, regardless if he plays with a U.S. or Canadian team, homegrown being someone who's, you know, signed with an MLS academy, they're going to be deemed a domestic player straight across the board. So that's great. That's a great first step. But the question that I raised in the press conference to Don Garber and several other people did is, why didn't you extend this program to every Canadian? So to St. Ricketts, a Canadian, a domestic player on Toronto FC would be deemed an international player if you went to, say, FC Dallas or San Jose. Why not open it up and change that rule finally? Because it's the inequity here is, I think, the issue that a lot of us have. Mm-hmm. And so he was getting, you know, more and more questions about that. And, they throw the issue about, oh, well, it's a labor issue, it's a legal issue. And I think that's a bunch of nonsense.
He didn't answer the question.
No, he didn't answer the question. So... But the thing was, and I thought it was pretty funny, it was like, I think he expected that we were all going to like fawn over him about this whole developmental thing, which again, it's great. Don't Don't misunderstand me.
But it should have happened years ago, number one, and it can go further and should have gone further.
Yeah, it should have included all the Canadian players. Right. So if he honestly thought that we were going to give him like a standing round of ovation and not, that none of us were going to bring up the point that you really haven't sort of addressed the big issue, then, you know, I don't know what he was thinking.
He sat there and...
He was miffed.
He lectured us.
Yeah, he was miffed.
He was really not happy about it. He goes, I thought this would be a kind of a more positive room. Sorry.
It was
what do you want to say? Like, thanks, pat on the back for doing something that should have happened years ago? No. Yeah.
And for not going far enough? Like,
and
it, then, it was really...
And not answering the damn questions when it's asked of you?
It was really, I was surprised that he was genuinely surprised.
Yep.
Like, it was just stunning. How could he... I mean, he had to have known that, you know, the bulk of the press conference, he was going to get those questions.
Well, if he didn't, he really has misread the Canadian media.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
We're not big time Charlies here.
Yes.
You know, we need to actually follow the game and the inner workings of the game and do understand what would be best for our country
right.
within this league. I know. I found it quite amusing.
I'm just the way,
like, really? Are you really like telling us off here?
That was like just startling.
Bad
it was
day?
Just like,
done?
Yeah, man. That was something. I got to say, that really kind of caught my attention and talked about it with several of my colleagues in the press box because I thought that was my impression, right? That he was miffed and that he was, you know, coming off like a, I won't say it. And I thought, okay, maybe that's my false impression. So talking to several others, you know, who were there and just like, oh no, bang on, John. He was like, no,
he
was miffed.
Favor, at the State of Union press conference next Friday,
I'm going to ask
the same question
it.
Again.
Absolutely, I'm going
nice.
To.
Nice. All right.
Yeah.
So, you know, Don, you didn't answer this question when you asked it several times last week. Have you
right.
had time to reflect and maybe now give us an answer?
Right.
It's a big issue. It is.
It is. And again,
overall, it's a good day for Canadian soccer.
Absolutely.
But we're always hoping for a better day.
Sure. And I don't mean to suggest that, you know, if all Canadians are treated as domestics, both on U.S. and Canadian teams, that all of a sudden our Canadian national team is going to go through the roof and that this solves all of our problems.
No,
I'm not suggesting that at all. But every little bit helps. And again, as I said, it's an issue of fairness. And, you know, it is an inequity. You know, players aren't being treated the same. And this is... a league that has teams in Canada and the U.S. So you should have, you know, the same rule for both players, I think.
How many TFC players in the current matchday squad would now be considered domestics? Ashton?
They'd all be committed domestics.
No, within the States, though.
Oh, yeah. So Will Johnson, because he has a U.S. passport.
Right. But with the new rules, though.
So Ashton would be.
He would, right?
Yeah. And I think Osorio, too, because I think technically he's a homegrown
player. I was thinking about
that,
but when he joined, he played in Uruguay, right? Did he?
Yeah, but I think he's classified as a homegrown.
Right.
I'd have to, and I think probably, and I think guys like Jay Chapman and
Jordan Hamilton.
Yeah, and Jordan Hamilton would.
Yeah,
there's probably some other guys that I'm missing, but like Tosin Ricketts wouldn't be. This doesn't sort of affect him.
Right.
If Will Johnson didn't have a U.S. passport, then you know this wouldn't affect him. So and like how many new players on the Whitecaps and the Impact. So Don Garber might suggest it's not a big deal, but it's a big deal.
Yeah, absolutely. You're a big deal, Jamer.
Well, thank you. You are too.
You've been working hard the last little while, man.
God, I'm tired.
You need a break. One more week left.
Yeah.
And then enjoy Christmas.
Yeah, okay.
All right, we're out of time. Hope you enjoyed that. Not sure about Monday's podcast. I'm really apologetic, actually, regarding the
lack of
Mondays.
You guys are slacking off. What's going on?
Well, TFC's been killing me the last, 3 weeks. Dunlop and Dobby are also extremely busy. Dunlop was called off to do Raptors this past Monday. So we're trying. Really are trying. But we're not scheduled for this stuff, right? It's on our own time. So we'll endeavor. But this Monday, I doubt it. Because I'm assuming that there'll be something to do with TFC. But keep posted on Twitter. And we'll let you know. Jamer, thank you.
Thank you.
Eric Prime behind the glass. Thank you very much, Eric. Hope you enjoyed that. Cheers for listening.